Hello, and welcome to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. We are broadcasting live from Feast, Portland. This is the first broadcast of the day. We'll be here all day today, Friday, and all day tomorrow, Saturday. I'm Andrew Friedman. I'll be interviewing chefs both days in tag team with other members of the Heritage team. And before we kick things off, I just need to thank, on behalf of Heritage, Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. And we are sitting here on a beautiful, people think of rain, I think, unfairly with the Pacific Northwest. It does rain here, but when it doesn't rain, it is spectacular, as it is today.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous day.
Yes.
And this is Mike Solomonoff.
Yes, I was going to say, for people who don't recognize the voice, I was about to introduce you. This is Mike Solomoff. First of all, I have to, let me introduce you properly. Mike Solomoff, the chef from Philadelphia. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you will know who Mike is. But for those who need a refresher, Mike is the chef and co-owner of Philadelphia's Federal Donuts, Diesengoff, Abe Fisher, Goldie, and the philanthropic restaurant Rooster Soup Company. Which donates 100% of its profits to the Broad Street Ministry Hospitality Collaborative. Excuse me if I sounded a little hesitant in there. I couldn't hear myself for a second. I wasn't sure if we were still broadcasting. It's the first minute of our festival coverage. So, Mike, first of all, I think you just answered it when you introduced yourself. I recently heard a podcast with you, and they referred to you as Mike Solomoff.
Yes.
Which is the correct pronunciation?
The correct pronunciation is Solomonov. But nobody gets that. So I've accepted the fact, and this is sort of like who I am a little bit. The American pronunciation, Solomonov.
Yeah.
Or Solomonov is fine.
Okay.
All of it's fine.
Okay. Well, when I heard it, I felt bad because I've always referred to you the other way, including in our last interview.
It could have been so much worse, and like I still have like post-traumatic stress from substitute teachers in elementary school.
Okay.
Totally butchering it. So you're good.
Okay.
Totally good.
So first of all, since you're the first interview of the day here.
Yes.
How do you go to a lot of festivals?
So I don't. I feel like I do. I don't. We try to not. We try to just go to the ones that we like really want to, or the ones that make sense.
Yeah.
Usually I do like South Beach Food and Wine and New York. South Beach Wine and Food, New York Wine and Food. I like Lee Schreger a lot, and I think he puts on, just from an organizational standpoint, I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
How you can sort of uproot so many, 450 chefs and
bring. Right.
But Feast is pretty magical, and Portland is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon is amazing.
Yeah.
And Mike Thielen and the whole Bon Appetit sort of people are awesome. So I love it here, and this is a good excuse for us to get to the Pacific Northwest.
I know, it's so great here. I haven't been out this way. I used to come out here about once every 5 or 6 weeks when I had a normal day job.
Yeah.
I haven't been out here in like 15, 17 years.
Dude,
it's that first morning you wake up out here, the air is so great. The people are awesome.
I was here earlier this week, actually. This is my second trip this week to Oregon. And
what?
So we did like a kickoff kind of thing with the Israeli Ministry of Tourism and the Oregon Tourism Board.
Yeah.
We had like a Rosh Hashanah dinner
at this
house in Pacific City, which is like overlooking like the ocean, right?
Yeah.
And it was crazy good. And we did a sort of a collabo with John Gorham, who owns a bunch of restaurants here.
Yeah.
And Sam Smith, who is a Tusk partner.
Sam's actually being here later today or tomorrow, but we're interviewing Sam as part of this.
Yeah, so Sam and his chef de cuisine, Wes, were Zahav alum, like the first sous chefs of Zahav
Restaurant.
I didn't
realize that.
Yeah, so I just had dinner at Tusk last night for the first time.
And?
So good.
Yeah.
Flawless, like perfect.
So did you feel a sort of like a parental or a big brotherly sort of pride in that?
I mean, I guess so, even though I'm like turning 40 in a week, so it makes me like depressed to even think like that. But it is, I'm just super proud. I mean, honestly, like, I feel invested, obviously, in their success, you know, but it's really amazing to taste. I mean, because before we opened Zahav, like, we traveled to Israel, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were sous chefs with me before Zahav existed, so.
Right.
I feel like we discovered a lot together, and to see and feel their style and sort of spirit in which they cook is just amazing. And also, the quality of produce here is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so. It's funny because people always talk about, like, the Bay Area as sort of like, you know, the standard bearer for that. But yeah. I've been coming. I used to come mostly to Seattle, but I used to make trips out here as well.
Yeah.
But you go to, like, some of the markets out here, it's as crazy. Good as you'll find anywhere.
I agree. I mean, I think that all.
And then there's the seafood.
Well, the seafood is sick, but the farmers here, I feel like, are pretty invested into the sort of style and spirit, again, of the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a guy here that grows, like, green wheat berries, like Frica, which is, like, very Levantine,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's where you take underripe wheat berries and you roast them, basically, on the grass that they grow in, out in the fields, you know, which is a very old-school dish. And the fact that there are farmers here that are interested in that is just amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love it. I really do love it. I got to cold water surf with my 7-year-old.
Nice.
You know? And I was like, this is where Goonies was filmed. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I forgot it.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned, though, the purveyors out here, because I ran into last night, you were one of the chefs. There was an 80s versus 90s event mm-hmm. where chefs did food that was sort of paying tribute or homage to to food of different eras, and then they were paired up, and then the diners, I guess, or the guests voted.
Yeah.
And so it was an 80s versus 90s contest. But Emma Benson of Aquavit in New York was there, and she was telling me that for the dinner that she's participating in out here, she's meeting for the first time her scallop purveyor.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and like probably as you and I sit here right now, she and her sous chef are meeting this person for the first time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I want to, before we get too far in, because I want to spend some time on it, you were one of the chefs participating in a zero-proof dinner tonight. I'm not promoting this, by the way. It is sold out.
Yeah.
So if you're hearing this,
sold out in the first 2 minutes or something that went
well. Well, it makes sense that it would be sold out. So first of all, the chefs involved would sell it out anyway. There's Gabrielle Rooker, Andrew Zimmern, Sean Brock. I hope I don't mispronounce his last name. Gregory Gordet or Gorday.
Yeah.
And then there were. So the idea of the dinner is that all the chefs involved. How do we say this? Are sober?
Sober.
That's the right
word.
Or in
recovery, I guess.
In recovery.
Yeah.
You get the idea if you're listening to this. And the dinner is a full dinner that there will be no alcohol served. And Evan Zimmerman, a Portland talent, excuse me, is serving non-alcoholic drinks. And it is the zero-proof dinner.
Right, right. So Evan's pairing. He's done sort of a pairing for everything.
Yeah.
I think that Gabriel called Andrew Zimmerman and was like, I've got this idea.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andrew was like, hey, man, you got to talk to, you know, and I've known Gabe, like, we are sort of, I think we sort of started at the same time.
Yeah.
So the first time I met Gabrielle Rooker, which he probably doesn't remember, it was this like restaurant hospitality. You know, I got on some list with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were like rising stars.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up meeting in Vegas.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, 15 years, you know, so long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just so funny. That was like kind of the first time we had met. We were like in a limo in Vegas and drinking like Red Bulls and vodka and jumping in swimming pools, you know? And then to get a call from him, you know, years later and sort of telling me that, you know, he's got this sort of new lifestyle. He is in recovery and he wants to put on this dinner. I mean, it's just amazing.
I've never heard of one. Have you done a dinner
this
like this before?
First of its kind.
Yeah. Well, first of all, can we just talk from, I don't want to get too heavy here first thing in the morning.
That's
but
fine.
You know, I have.
You guys have coffee. You have coffee in this Airstream, for the love of God, right?
Are you in desperate need of a coffee?
I mean, if we're going to talk like drugs, maybe, I don't know. You don't need to. I'm just joking.
Do you want my latte?
Absolutely.
I'll sacrifice my latte.
Give me that freaking latte.
I've had a few sips, but I'm good. You can take the lid off. You'll be fine.
That's fine. I don't actually. I mean, we're sharing, like, I mean, we're so close to quarters, it doesn't really matter. But
okay. So here's what I wanted to ask you, though. I have chef friends who, and people who aren't chefs, just people in the business who are, you know, in recovery. It is especially difficult to be in recovery and be in your business, is it not? You are surrounded by beverages. You're surrounded by whatever might be going around after hours. It's very, I think, unique to your industry to be that surrounded by it.
I mean, yes and no. I think that, so when I was like in rehab and detox,
mm-hmm.
I, there are people that had worked in the industry before.
Yeah.
But the first thing, everyone's like, you shouldn't be in this industry.
Yeah.
You know, it's too much.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, that's also countered with the suggestion that you shouldn't make any major changes the first year of sobriety. And I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? I own a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, am I supposed to just like walk away from it?
Right.
Or fold?
Yeah.
And I don't know if there are many reasons why, obviously serving alcohol and having alcohol accessible.
Yeah.
Big one, you know, and also maybe the sort of mentality or the, the psyche of people that work in restaurants
mm-hmm.
that sort of love it, that,
yeah.
you know, are used to like either cash as servers, which is kind of dated,
yeah.
or line cooks that can like, that love pressure, that love being
yeah.
neurotic,
yeah.
like it fuels a lot. On the other hand, I mean, really, truly, addiction affects everybody,
yeah.
right? I mean,
yeah.
there is not one family in the U.S. that's not, that
100%
not affected by this,
yeah.
you know? And I think that just now we're starting to realize that, like, it doesn't need to be this way. I mean, just like as every other, listen, in the restaurants, we have dealt with gender inequality,
mm-hmm.
immigration, and addiction from day one,
mm-hmm.
right? And
yes.
it's something that we have been really trying to change and deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, when I got out of rehab, I had to look at all of my... and Sam was one of them. Sam was my sous chef. I called him on the way to detox and said, hey, dude, just so you know, I've been hiding like a crack addiction for the past, as long as I've known you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long I'm going to be in detox for. And, we had opened Zahav. Zahav was 3 months old.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, dude, you got this, right? So I had to come back from that, look at every single person that I'd lied to, taken advantage of, manipulated, you know, also managed. I mean, it was the
yeah.
like leader and say, you know, I've got this huge problem and like, we need to change.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was like, all right, well, I'm not serving. We're not going to have shift drinks anymore
mm-hmm.
in the restaurant. And then it was like, now, I mean, not
you
to
made
say,
that change.
I made that change because it doesn't make any sense. First of all, you can't just give out alcohol to your employees and think that that's a professional.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Secondly, I can't be around that.
Yes.
It's my kitchen. It's my restaurant.
Yeah.
Like I'm not putting myself in that position.
Yeah.
And it's not okay in my restaurant to come in banged up,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it doesn't
yeah.
look cool. Like, and I've worked in plenty of places where we do all nighters and, you know, do cocaine until like it was on the way to work
right.
and then cook our asses off and the food was great. And it was like, you know, and we were like badasses, but that is not
yeah.
acceptable.
Yeah.
It is not healthy. I'm not going to contribute. I'm not going to enable. I'm not going to, you know, aid in people like damaging themselves or
yeah.
dying. And I want to be there as a mentor, as a friend, as
yes.
somebody that cares about these people. And
yeah.
like, I'm not going to, I can't contradict myself and give out alcohol. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like they're, you just have to at one point say, dude, this is not cool.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it. We all want to be professional. Everybody wants to be owners. They want to
yeah.
be managers.
Yeah.
They want to have families.
Yeah.
You know, it starts with like, honestly, my behavior and
yeah.
that it had to happen.
Yeah.
So yes, but I know plenty of attorneys. I know plenty of filmmakers. I know plenty of bankers.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody
yeah.
has it. I know plenty of normal people that have never had addiction in their family that have had like some sort of back surgery that have been prescribed to OxyContin,
yes.
and then
yeah.
2 months later they're shooting dope. You know, and it
yeah.
and it's something that we have to, as a society, be like a little realistic about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the taboo of like the junkie that, you know, especially like I grew up in a. My parents didn't drink, you know, not because they were like in recovery. They just, it wasn't part of like what they
yeah.
did. My parents never smoked weed. Like,
yeah.
I had this bug.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think now, especially like in Jewish culture, like that was like, my birthright is to be this like doctor, lawyer,
right.
be well educated.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So it wasn't out in the open, and taboo, I think, is changing. And I think people are accepting that like these secrets,
yeah.
hiding this sort of thing, sweeping it under the rug, is not the way that we're going to get through this problem.
Is it easier or harder to have it in the open? You know, it used, someone's sobriety used to be, and in many cases still is, a very personal, private thing, right?
Well,
but there are, like, when I list these people who are participating in this dinner, right? Like, Andrew's a huge television presence. You know,
yeah.
These are all huge names,
yeah.
right? And people really know some of the most intimate stuff about their lives,
yeah.
right? And I think there's all the stuff you just described. I think there's a huge benefit that comes with that. But but it is very, it is sort of like being a little bit naked to the world, is it not? But does that make it easier? So, like, you're not hiding? You don't have to... Listen, no one's wondering why you're not having a glass of wine. No one's wondering why you eliminated shift drinks.
The first year in recovery was awful for me because I didn't know how to like tie my shoes, right?
I didn't know
how to like get anywhere, and I couldn't go to restaurants because I was like, well, how am I gonna, you know, they're gonna know, and they're gonna, I'm gonna have to say no, and I don't drink, and then, you know, eventually you're just like, I'm totally cool with this, and I don't have a problem with this, and I'm like, dude, they're lucky because if I, you know, and that's the big thing. Like now they're like, what, you don't drink at all? Like not even a sip of wine? And I'm like, give me a sip of wine, see what happens. Like I'll be back here tomorrow trying to like take money from you.
Well, that's the line from the great line from the West Wing when Leo says, I don't want one drink.
It never,
I want 100 drinks.
Listen, one is never, and what is it? One is too much. 100 is never enough. And at the end of the day, what is it like? The line that I used to use was that I'm allergic, and then I'm like, I break out in like handcuffs and police cars. So it is now I think it's great because I think that people embrace it because I think people are being realistic about it. Yes, it's a little bit weird. Like I didn't go into great detail with my parents, for example.
Right.
And they found out, like, I mean, they knew that I was in detox, they knew I was in recovery, they knew I was a drug addict. They didn't read, like,
they didn't have all the gory details.
They didn't have all the gory details until I decided to, like, be out with it in, like, the New York Times, right?
So before we stop, drastic gear shift.
I'm taking your coffee.
You should keep, I don't know why you gave it back to me. You should have it. You're you didn't drink that much.
Thanks.
So, drastic gear shift. It's like speed dating today because we only have a couple minutes, literally. You have a new book coming out.
Yeah.
The Zahav book was a huge success.
Yes.
I love it. Tell me just quickly, what's the elevator pitch for the new book?
I got to work on this elevator pitch. So basically Zahav was shot.
Okay. Give me the escalator version.
The escalator. So Zahav was shot through the restaurant, as sort of being like the frame of reference. I mean, it dealt with like history, my family history, Israeli history, Jewish history, and then like food. What we decided to do with Israeli Soul, which is the name of the book, is simply just like take the whole team that puts Zahav together and get on an airplane and go to Israel and shoot and then come back and say, what are the things that how do we find this to be relevant?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Love
so
it.
We went over to Israel. We were there for 8 days. I mean, it was like 9 days, including travel. We were there for 8 days eating. We had 82 meals.
Yeah.
And then we came back and we were like, this is how we're going to break up the chapters. These are the dishes that we want to do. And we shot them in my one bedroom apartment with like a crappy kitchen.
Is that right?
Yeah, totally. Like, because I wanted, what we wanted to do is say, well, if we can't make it in this tiny little kitchen.
Yeah.
Because we're thinking about our friends in New York that have like no kitchen.
Yeah, well.
Right?
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry about that. Our friends. Move back to Portland, bro. Okay, so we want it
to be
accessible.
Last time I interviewed you, you tried to get me to move to, you were telling me, trying to sell me on moving to Philly.
I still
think
that you should.
Story.
I mean, I think that is separate. But we want it to be accessible and we want it to be relatable and we want people to make this food, which we think is totally doable, totally easy.
And it's called Israeli Soul.
It's
coming out in about a month.
Yeah, I think October 16th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
It's gonna
be
dope.
Do you enjoy the book process? A lot of chefs find it. You've been through it once now.
We did Federal Donuts as well.
Oh, I'm Federal Donuts.
Yeah, and that was a little bit different. I mean, to be honest with you, I have like a really brilliant business partner, Steve Cook, who ends up writing all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he is great, and we have Dorothy Kalins, who produced it, and Don Morris, who did page layout, my good friend Mike Persico, who shot everything. So like we have a team of people. It's a little bit it is grueling.
Yeah,
it is hard. I mean, we have full-time jobs, like 13
sure.
of them besides
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
But it is fun and it's like special, I think.
Awesome.
As you know.
Yes.
Listen, you hold your book in your hand and you see the things that you've processed, synthesized.
We have the same agent, David Black.
Yeah.
Who's not a publicity seeker. David, I'm sorry I mentioned you on the air.
Dude, David is as good as he gets.
When David gets the first copy, he used to say this to me when a new copy of a book would come in.
Yowza.
For the first one, he would call me, yowza. But the first time he called me, my first nonfiction book, he said, I'm holding your book. And I said, how's it look? He got his before I got mine.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's a beautiful bouncing baby book.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but that is kind of what it feels like.
Listen, if you find yourself with David as your agent, you know the good things are going to happen.
That
is
true.
Just as good as it gets.
All right. Well, on that note, thanks for coming in relatively early.
Yeah.
For a food festival.
Yo, thanks so much for having me.
And have a great success with the dinner. I'm sorry I won't be there, but I wish you all the best with that.
I think there'll probably be more of these in our future.
I have a feeling there will be.
Great
all right. Thanks, Mike.
Good
to see you.